What's up? This is Saul Williams chilling here in Montreal here on CKUT. Peace.
We pledge alliance with those who have undergone attack for voicing opposition to the war.
The alert level in your region or a neighboring region is red. To curb the spread of COVID-19, gatherings with family and friends in private homes and yards are prohibited. Travel between regions should be avoided, and traveling to yellow zones is forbidden. It's forbidden to leave your home between 9:30 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about the other measures in place. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Vaccination against COVID-19 is now underway for priority groups. Visit quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine to follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book your appointment online. If necessary, you can also call 1-877-644-4545. Once you've been vaccinated, it's important to continue to protect yourself by following the basic health guidelines. The vaccine, a safe way to protect ourselves. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
C is for
cauliflower.
Confusion. Creation.
Pickle. K is for
kitten.
Camp.
See, wait. Sandro, see. U, unbearable.
U is for underground.
Oh, yeah.
Umbrella.
T. Trite.
Tremendous.
Torment.
Tire.
C. K.
I can't think of a U one. T.
T.
F is for famous.
Fun.
Good evening. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy, recording from home on Thursday, May 13th, 2021. On tonight's show, my guests, Mike Payette of Geordie Theatre on using theater to teach kids about mental health.
Feeling certain moods that we don't necessarily like, but we're feeling them just the same. And it's not just young people who feel that. We can absolutely empathize with that. And how we can navigate our way through those times. And how, you know, the adults in our lives or our peers or friends, how we can be active supporters and active allies to not shut down what those emotions are, but to embrace them.
Catherine Bourgeois of Joe, Jack, and John on creating a more inclusive world with immersive theater.
We're really intrigued and fascinated by having like a mandate, an artistic mandate that would allow us to actually invite different people, diversity of experiences and imaginations, and like diversity of language or way of using theater and art as a way to just speak up and change the world.
And improv artist Jason Grimmer on making comedy on the computer.
One of the instructions I try to give to the cast is, let's not draw attention to the fact that we're on the internet or on Zoom, because it's very clear. So let's not do too much that draws attention to it. In that case, I mean, everyone's improvising, it's on the spot. So when something happens, something happens. And someone makes a comment, then we have to sort of look at it. So it might change a scene all of a sudden that someone's frozen and that's what they have to deal with. And it's just like real improv.
The Tale of Virginia Woolf is not for the faint of heart. The novelist, born in London in 1882, is considered one of the most important authors of the last century. Her works translated in over 50 languages, widely viewed as a pioneering female voice. But Virginia also struggled with mental illness and suffered multiple breakdowns over the course of her own life. So it seems like an odd choice to make Virginia the star of a children's book. But that is what Canadian writer Keogh McClear did with their Governor General award-winning book. And now playwright Cole Lewis has adapted that book, Virginia Woolf, with just one O, not two like the author, for the stage in order to teach kids about mental health and seeking support, And Geordie Theatre is presenting its world premiere this month online. Mike Payette is the artistic and executive director at Geordie Theatre, and you might have heard the news that he's accepted a wonderful new job. I spoke with Mike last week about Virginia Woolf and his plum new gig. Welcome back to Upstage, Mike. So lovely to speak with you.
So great to speak with you. Thanks for having me back. It's so awesome to speak with you, Sarah. You're great.
Oh, thank you. That's so kind. And Mike, why don't we start off with the beginning? The big news for you is you're moving to Tarragon Theatre, storied space in Toronto. This is a really exciting move for you. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I start this. It's been a really impactful few months since the announcement in March, and the outpouring of love and excitement and all of those things is really, really, really humbling to receive during these times. So thank you, Sarah. It's exciting. I'm looking forward to it.
You officially start in the fall, correct? As when you're taking over the reins?
Yeah, that's right. So we have, I'm grateful to have a pretty lengthy transition that starts, I'm doing some double duty between my transition out of Geordie and my transition into Tarragon starting in September. And then I officially make the geographical move in January. So I'm still in Montreal for a good couple of months doing, like I said, doing the double duty. But yeah, the job officially begins in September.
Now, I think for the Montreal theater community, it feels like we're losing you to have you go to another city and another company. But in another way, it's a win, I think, both for Geordie and the other companies and productions you've worked on, Table d'Hôte, the other work that you've done at Centaur as well, at Théâtre Jean Duceppe. So it's also good for Montreal, too, in that we've produced you. And here you are going to a company that is known across the country. So that's my perspective from the Montreal theater community, kind of my viewpoint. And I'm curious to know what this move means for you. I mean, besides having to, be in a different town and changing jobs in the transition, what does this mean for you?
Yeah, I appreciate that perspective that you're bringing forward there, Sarah, because I completely agree. You know, I was born and bred in Montreal. I've grown up with this community, and it's the evolution of the discourse surrounding the community and where we want to see theater and its impact on the larger community, not just our artistic one. And I've been really fortunate to have this really solid foundation in within Montreal and building a career with some exceptional colleagues and peers and art makers in the backdrop of what Quebec theater is. I'm really fortunate to have all of that, and so one of the biggest things that I'm looking forward to is maintaining that connection with the city. Like, I will never lose the fact that Montreal is in my heart. It's in my core. And so one of the things I'm especially looking forward to when I arrive at Tarragon is banking on those connections, banking on those bridges that, the space, as you mentioned, it's such a storied space, Tarragon. It has a 50-year history of being a foundational theater company in the country, and entering into it in its next chapter, what the next 50 years looks like, it's a really exciting time. And so what I'm going into Tarragon with is what are the partnerships, what are the relationships that I can bring to Toronto, that I can bring to the city, that I can bring to Tarragon, that speak to the vivacity and the vitality of work that's happening in other parts of the country. And that absolutely includes Montreal. I mean, the English language theater community is a thriving one. It's also a growing one. I think the past few years have really mobilized English language theater in Quebec to a national platform. We're engaged in conversations with regions across the country. And so that wasn't always the case. And so you know, Montreal is on this particular high, and I want to, you know, not take advantage of that, but I absolutely want to embrace that and bring that to Tarragon, and look for the, you know, the ways in which we can embolden art, artistic practice, engaging artists from region to region, so we can create more connection and more collaboration. It just makes the art that much more fruitful. And it's something that has been a pillar personally, and a sort of driving force for a lot of the work that I do, you know, getting multiple voices, getting collaborators from different practices. And that's not going to be any different when I get to Toronto.
Well, we'll leave the personal stuff aside, but congratulations again. I'm so glad you're not going to be forgetting us. We won't be in the rearview mirror. It'll still be the work and the development that you've done here is, I guess I can tell, still going to be very much part of what you'll be doing in this next step. I'm speaking with Mike Payette, who is the artistic director at Geordie Theatre, outgoing, as we've been discussing. The play itself that we are talking about is something you've directed, Virginia Woolf. Now, first things first, you think Virginia Woolf, the author, that doesn't sound like it would be the kind of content we've been hearing for kids, but that this is Cole Lewis's play, and it's based on a children's story that is based on the story of Virginia Woolf. Can we start with Keo McClure and what they were trying to do by taking the storied author's biography?
Mm-hmm. So we know, historically speaking, Virginia Woolf, the author, she, you know, we know that she was diagnosed with mental illness, depression. She suffered, she experienced that. She suffered through a lot of her life with that diagnosis. And it spoke a lot to her writing and the works and the oeuvres that she was creating. But, you know, outside of the artist, there's a relationship that she had with her older sister, Vanessa, who was a painter, and they had a really special relationship. That Vanessa, especially when their mother passed away, Vanessa took on this role of you know, parent or caregiver, and really watching over Virginia and trying to create, you know, a method in which Virginia can continue to thrive. And so what Keo McClure has put together in this Governor General award-winning book is taking the essence of that relationship of two sisters who are seemingly on, you know, opposite ends. You know, one who is experiencing some, you know, some dark feelings, some unwanted emotions. She feels wolfish. And so on this particular day, you know, her older sister Vanessa comes in and into her room and discovers that Virginia does not want to play outside. She doesn't want to remember the things that connected them before, whether it be, you know, the kinds of dress that they wore, their morning routine, the painting, all of those things, because Virginia is really just not in the mood. And so here we have this story through Keo of this particular day, right? Where Virginia's in this wolfish mood. Vanessa's trying to come in and connect with her sister. And through trial and error, through successes and many failures, Vanessa discovers that in order to get Virginia to a place of perhaps articulating what it is that she's going through is to bring this world of Bloomsbury to her room. Now, Bloomsbury, again, historically is an actual place. We know about the Bloomsbury Club, which housed many authors and artists of the time during Virginia Woolf and Vanessa's time. But here, Bloomsbury is just this place that Virginia feels safe, where she feels comfortable, where the world of fields, of creatures and light and all of those things that make her feel, safe and hopeful. And so Vanessa literally paints Bloomsbury in her room. And so through that, through creativity, through the images, through art, Vanessa uses tools in which, you know, Virginia can feel as though she can express herself. And that's really what's at the heart of this story. And it's one of the most compelling children's books that I've read. And I'm, you know, Cole Lewis and Clelia Scala, who co-adapted this piece, Cole did the text and Clelia did the images. They've really, embolden that relationship even more, and looking at what is going on behind, in the mind rather of Virginia and in the mind of Vanessa as they are trying to communicate with each other. And so it's a highly theatrical piece. Like, it's very sensorial and it's very colorful as well, because, you know, this play, the book, the adaptation is all focusing on the conversation of mental health with young people. But it's not explicitly about, say, mental illness. It's really about the times when we feel dark, when we're feeling certain moods that we don't necessarily like, but we're feeling them just the same. And it's not just young people who feel that. We can absolutely empathize with that, and how we can navigate our way through those times, and how, you know, the adults in our lives or our peers or friends, how we can be active supporters and active allies to not shut down what those emotions are, but to embrace them and to recognize that they are okay.
About asking for help, but also giving it, which is, it's, mental health is difficult to talk about with adults, but it's, as you might expect, also difficult a subject to broach with children too. I'm speaking with Mike Payette, who is the director of Virginia Woolf with Geordie Theatre, where he is artistic director, at least for the next few months. Now, I wanted to ask about the two performers playing the role of Virginia and Vanessa, Jennifer Roberts, who was in Chloe's Choice at Geordie, as well as Alexandra Laferriere, both very talented actresses. Can you tell me about what you were talking about with them to kind of get them to incarnate these two roles that come from a children's book, but are also inspired by his actual figures?
Well, it's such a fascinating time to be creating theater, but it's a particularly fascinating time to be creating a story that encompasses the discourse of mental health, during what has been a completely challenging and difficult time for so many. So a lot of the conversations that we had in the rehearsal room, really off the top, was recognizing exactly that. You know, for many of us in the room, it had been almost a year since we had, you know, been in a rehearsal hall, you know, creating theater. I know for Jen and Alex, that was the case. And so there are multiple, you know, things that were happening in tandem. One, you know, the story itself and in embracing the imagination and the youthful nature of this play, reigniting the imagination that perhaps was lost for the performer. The other thing is like how we wanted to actually operate within the room. Lots of in-depth conversation of the things that are unsaid, because there's a lot of text, but it's not, there are a lot of silent moments as well that speak to what is happening for each of these characters. And so we wanted to create a vocabulary that was not just about the spoken word, but the, you know, whether it be the physical or sounds, you know, the growls that Virginia makes in terms of the wolf. Right. What do those actually mean? What is it that's being communicated to the other person, and creating a legend surrounding that? That was really the core of a lot of the work that we did. And we also had to just remember that we're looking at this story through a young person's lens. And we, as adults, have a tendency, certainly, to look at it through the framework of our own experiences now. But what a younger perspective gives us is an extra layer of honesty, or a pursuit for honesty, because both of these characters are not resolved. They're not at a place where they know what is happening necessarily, that we actually get to experience their journey. And that was very reminiscent of the process itself. We were quite kind to ourselves in creating for those reasons. And of course, again, we're still in COVID land. We're talking about mental health, which is already a taboo conversation, generally speaking, but particularly for youth. What is the importance of telling this story now and remembering the audience in which, you know, the story is really, really meant for? I think once we reminded ourselves of those layers, it really ignited, yes, the creativity in the room, but an ability for us to talk about some really in-depth stuff pertaining to the themes of the play in really meaningful, significant ways, as opposed to just on the surface.
Now, this was filmed or is going to be filmed and then will be actually shown at specific times. Can you tell me just logistics-wise why you chose to go with that format?
Yeah, so it has been filmed now. We wrapped shooting last week. I can't remember. A week and a half, somewhere around then. And then we went into the post-production editing process with our film production partners, Paradigm. So we know at this time, you know, with the sort of ebbs and flows of information coming from the government, reopening theaters, et cetera, that there's absolutely a desire. There was the desire, or rather the investigation of what that would look like for our young people. And schools and our general public in terms of youth, we're not quite there yet in terms of the feeling comfortable of being in the same space. It's not necessarily the case in, say, adult theater, but that's where we are right now. But because that was a fact, we didn't want to jeopardize the presentation of the show. We were initially presenting this or producing this before the pandemic hit. And already the conversation was timely for young people. But particularly because of where we are now in the world, there's that much more urgency in telling this story. And so we wanted to find the right platform in which to tell it. And that was through a filmed presentation of a theater experience. So what you're going to see, what audiences are going to see, they're not going to see, you know, they're not going to see a film in a traditional sense. They're going to still see the mechanics and the magic, that the practical magic that theater has to offer, but through a filmed lens. And so that just keeps it in the realm of theater, as opposed to it being completely digital or completely virtual. And again, keeps the mechanism or the medium of what theater has to offer for audiences. And that was really important to us. You know, we're not at the National Theater level or like the Hamilton level. Like, that's not what this is. Although I'm really, really proud of the work that has been put together, because like Hamilton or like National Theater, you get to embrace the lights, the sounds, the certain tics and traits and mannerisms of performance that only theater has to offer. So that's why we made that decision, and that's why we're moving ahead with it, and we're really, really proud of the work so far.
And as you were saying, it's a sensorial experience that stood out to me. You mentioned that early on, that it is very much a lush show, and so you want to convey that without it being a movie or a short film, right?
That's exactly right. And, you know, like, full transparency, like, Jordy Theater, Jordy Productions is a theater company, and right? And so this was a huge learning curve for all of us.
Absolutely.
And, but it was an investigation that we were all, you know, stepping forward into. And so, of course, there were bumps and lots of moments to learn along the way. But in terms of the product, like, all of that work has lent itself to what I think is a sensorial, but an exceptional experience for young people and the adults in their lives to experience. And so, yeah, through the music, through the animation that is there, we're actually playing with animation, through the video images that are also projected. Mm-hmm. And so all of that is really, really cool. It really is a blending of theater and film. Something that Jordy hasn't, endeavored to bring forward, but here's the time to try things and to keep art alive and find the way to make it as accessible to as many people during these challenging times.
And I'm sure at the same time, everybody cannot wait to be back doing a traditional live theater production.
Absolutely. You know, and we're no different. We're no different. But, you know, certainly as vaccines roll out and time moves forward, you know, there are, knock on wood, g- good, you know, things happening in terms of the evolution of the pandemic here in Montreal. And we'll see what the future holds. But we're all, like everybody else, we're all holding on. We're all ready to adapt, to continue adapting as we have for the past year and a bit. And but in the meantime, our artists are going to continue to work. Our audiences will still be a part of our work and a part of the dissemination of our work. And so until we can be in the same room again, we will find other ways to keep the vitality of theater alive for our company, for, you know, our audiences, and certainly for our artists. But we're right with you. We will, you know, we look forward to being in the same space again and getting that live experience. It will happen in the meantime. We're extremely hopeful and grateful that this will land, you know, significantly for families and schools.
Mike, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you. Break a leg, if we can still say that. And congratulations again on your big transition over to Tarragon Theatre. Your time is much appreciated.
A pleasure as always, Sarah. Thanks for the love, as usual. Thank you.
That was Mike Payette, outgoing artistic and executive director at Geordie Theatre, soon to be director at Tarragon Theatre in Toronto. He directs Virginia Woolf, which has two more showings this weekend, Saturday at 1 p.m. and Sunday at 4 p.m. Tickets are only $15 per household, and you can book or get more information at geordie.ca, G-E-O-R-D-I-E, or call 514-845-9810, extension 207. Virginia Woolf is recommended for kids age 6 and up. I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come, how improv found a new home online, and why it's not so bad to have a small audience after all. I'm very intrigued by a new show that just opened up this week at Espace Libre. It mixes virtual reality headsets and live acting. It's available in both French and English, and it's only 25 minutes long. And it also, more importantly, brings to the fore a harrowing reality for women with intellectual disabilities. The show is called Violette, and it's produced by the company Joe, Jack, and John. This is their first foray into English theater in Montreal. They've conscripted talented mainstay Tamara Brown into the cast. The company works with actors who have intellectual disabilities. Director Catherine Bourgeois co-founded Joe, Jack, et John just out of theater school 17 years ago. I think you'll be fascinated to hear her explain her work and motivations. I spoke with Catherine Bourgeois a few days ago to talk about Violette. And just a heads up, we do mention sexual assault in this conversation. Welcome, Catherine, to Upstage. Thank you for taking the time. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Thank you for welcoming me.
Why don't we start with your company? It's a fascinating, you do fascinating work. This is going to be a production in English and in French, so you're looking at new audiences this time around. It's your 17th year in operation, and the code word here is inclusivity. Tell me about the journey of Joe, Jack, and John.
So as you said, like we kind of co-founded the company 17 years ago, in 2004. And right from the get-go, our artistic mandate was to do creation, collective creation, or like collaborative creation, devised work through teams that are very inclusive. By that, I mean that like we, like each project, each production has involved like actors who live with disability. And most of our actors are actually members of a school called Les Muses, the Muses, that has been going on for like, I guess, over 20 years as well. So we are very lucky to have like actually like a place where actors in Montreal get trained for acting, actors living with an intellectual disability or like other kind of developmental challenges. They can learn like dancing, singing, acting, all kind of like skills that are used for like live arts. in that school. So this is actually a bit of a luck for us, so that that made the work possible and feasible to actually have this pool of actors that are trained, professionally trained.
What led you to do this kind of work?
I guess I do have an interest to, I mean, there's an interest to hear different perspective. When we finished the university, my colleague and I, Amélie Dumoulin, was the co-founder of the company. We were like, oh, we were looking around us and we could see that everybody was like kind of like starting companies with people their age, their backgrounds, their like all. And we were like, oh, we're really intrigued and fascinated by having like a mandate, an artistic mandate that would allow us to actually invite different people, diversity of experiences and imaginations, and like diversity of language or way of using theater and art as a way to like just speak up and change the world. So that's why we kind of like got really interested when we found out about that school, and we started like just collaboratively writing shows with like a real like mixed ability cast.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm speaking with Catherine Bourgeois, who is the director and the person with the concept behind Violette, the show that we are talking about right now. So let's skip to Violette and what the story is. And this is an immersive experience. So we are walking right into Violette's world, right? It's very intimate.
Yes, you are walking into a world. And actually, you'll have to stop by the box office and get like some kind of like sticker that's going to be the pass and to the doorway to Violette's world. But like when you're going to get out of the elevator, she's going to be there welcoming you. And so it's a show for one person at a time. And it's a short presentation of like about 25 minutes. And it's a mix between theater and VR or virtual reality. So Violette, a real actor, welcomes you at the theater and she brings you to her room, to her bedroom. And then she there's a bit of a dialogue, then there's some instruction. And then you put the headset on and the story, the VR, the 360 story starts, and it's the same Violette, same costume, same room, and it keeps just like unraveling. A bit more of a magical twist in the virtual version than in the real welcoming. But because actually she has like an imaginary friend, which is a crow lady played by Tamara Brown. And like there's all kind of like a bit of a snow falling, a bit of like we find ourselves in a forest at some point. And so there's like this kind of like shape-shifting, set moving that's going on. But all that through the comfort of sitting on a small bed and traveling with Violette through her story, which is a very tragic story. But we really worked on making it like you know, the forest, the animals, like all this kind of like the feeling of, in French, we say like conte. What would be the word in it? Tales, or like a bit of those tales that we have, like just like the
folk tales.
So like this kind of like a fairy folk tales that allow often to tell very tragic stories.
Yes, I want to get into. Why don't we get into what the kind of theme is? Because this is also pulling off something. You know, just to contrast with this amazing form of storytelling you're sharing and the working with people who don't often get to be in productions like this. But it's a terrifying reality. A lot of women who are dealing with intellectual disabilities face sexual abuse. That's the focus of what we get to in the story. We don't want to share too much of it because the experience is only 25 minutes long. Was this something that you have dealt with in the past thematically, or is this something new that you've chosen to explore?
The company has always been interested in like working on very like socially like relevant themes. Mm-hmm. So our previous show was about like immigration and welcoming of migrants. So, and how do we like this kind of like, how do we live together and how we share our resources? But so this time around, obviously there was like a few waves of denunciations in the last years. And 4 or 5 years ago, I was like, I got kind of really surprised when I read the stats that like 70 to 90% of like a woman living with an intellectual disability will have to face sexual abuse during their lifetimes. And I was like, wow, this is like another realm. And I knew that because obviously like for 17 years, I've been like collaborating and sharing times with the different people with disability. And I knew the risk were much higher. But I guess like we didn't want to like, I would say that like it wouldn't be in VR if it was not for the theme. So I kind of like started like researching and thinking about that theme. And then I just thought, okay, we cannot just do a show on a stage about that and just project and talk loudly about this kind of like secret and the shame that comes with that and all of that. So that's where I started thinking about it more like a more intimate way of telling that story. And at the beginning, I was even thinking that like spectators could come into an apartment and drink tea with the character. And then it moved into like more like the VR story, which allows a bit of magical aspect to it. So I think it's important that we talk about the subject matter. I mean, not to say everything about it, but like that we talk about it so like people that might feel more fragile or like not that inclined to talk about that or to hear about that, that they don't come. Otherwise, it's a story that is, as I said, told in a magical, poetical way, but as well, it talks a lot about the necessity of speaking up because there's freedom and there's this kind of like libération de la parole. So like this, how the speech free us from the burden of shame and from the burden of those big stories, those abuse stories. So that's what I would say about it.
I'm speaking with Christine Bourgeois, who is the designer and director of Via Olette, coming to the MySpace later this month. It is really powerful, powerful stories to be telling. And sorry, not the My, the Espace Libre, my apologies. When we talk about the idea of putting on a VR headset and being greeted by one person and coming into a space, I'm so curious to know about how much of that was fueled by the current reality that we're in, COVID, and needing to be spaced out, and how much was motivated by what you're saying here about treating a really delicate theme with sensitivity towards both the audience and the people performing, and the fact that it's an uncomfortable subject.
Yeah, it is uncomfortable. So that's why we try to make the whole experience as comfortable as possible and as respectful as possible. So nothing was fueled by COVID because we were supposed to open last May. And the VR video, the VR film was actually shot in the spring of 2019. So, and I guess, there's a kind of like intimate way, but still we're struggling sometimes with the like keeping the actors 2 meters away, disinfecting the headset with like a UV thing. So I guess we did have a few challenges in terms of adapting this play, this experience to the COVID-proof one. But so the fuel behind it was very much about the necessity to have a more like confident or confiding tone to it, just like as a friend coming to your place and sitting and like you talk to that friend directly, looking at them in the eye. So there's this idea into like inviting this friend, a spectator friend that's coming to you and like just gently bringing them to your room and sharing your story with them. And I guess there's something touching, like in the fact that you meet a real human. And then after that, like in the VR section of it, you realize the tragic aspect of their life, because most of us do kind of like bear tragical aspect that like we don't just like open up to strangers like that. So there's this there's very specific quality of this intimacy of storytelling that I guess is very precious.
And you must be so excited to finally have this coming to an audience, knowing that I just realized you've been sitting on this video for 2 years now.
Yeah. We've never been, I mean, like, okay, the last year has been challenging, and now my producer and I, Penelope and I, were just like doing like, I don't know, 13, 14 hours days, like, like sorting out everything and like prepping and rehearsing and rigging everything. Like, I mean, the team is working really hard these days, but we are so happy. We've never been so happy to work that hard. So it's really exciting. We're so looking forward to meeting people. And I was just with the actors just before talking to you, and just like the show's opening like shortly. And it's like, okay, yay, we're so looking forward to meeting real spectators. Like,
now, of course, and so this was all conceived without, you know, thinking of a pandemic, but I can't help but feel as a potential audience member that it's almost seems safer because you'll be sitting in one spot, and the work done to film it was done before COVID. And then, you know, the headsets, they're cleaned and then passed on to someone else. You're only going to have three audience members at a time. Is that correct?
Yeah, we have three like kind of box set that, and each box set has their own headset, VR headset. And so we're rotating, and we have like a 5 minutes cleaning choreography between each spectator. So that allows us to steam, wipe, and as well, like, UV X-ray kind of thing, all the headset and the earphones. So it's very, yes, it is very safe, and it's only meeting one person, and there's social distancing and all of that. So it's because as well, our colleagues, our three actresses that are interpreting Violet, are women as well, are people that are like, that can be more like a fragile to COVID. So for us, it's always been very, very important to put everything forward that like respect the rules and makes it very safe for everyone.
One last very quick question. VR headsets, they feel very futuristic in a way. I guess they are kind of the future of entertainment in a way. Not a lot of people have had a chance to use them. Like, you could go to the Phi Center. Some people own their own headsets. Sometimes you can use your phone. Do you think this is going to be a cornerstone of theater moving forward? Or is it still kind of on the experimental stage?
That's a good question. I'm not sure, because it's very limitative. I do love going to the Phi Center and all of the experience they kind of like provide us. It's really like we're really lucky to have such a place in Montreal. However, like, I don't know to the extent of that. I think there's an interest if like people at home have their own headset, then pieces of movies and art pieces can travel very far without leaving their town. But like, in terms of like really theater and VR, I don't know. It's very demanding. It's really one-on-one. I'm not sure. And of course, this is a very safe kind of environment to discover VR, because you're sitting, you're comfortable, there's no interaction, there's no other people, there's no violence, it's not moving, the floor stays there. It's because some people can experience seasickness, but this piece is very kind of like quiet in a way. So like we didn't have many test spectators getting sick at all. So, and Violette is very respectful. There is not like any monster like coming out from there and just like surprising you or anything. But I think, I don't know the future of those mixed reality pieces, how it's going to go. Like, I wish I could read the future, really.
Well, it's a taste of the future. And as you said, an interesting and easy entryway into experiencing the headset. Thank you so much for your time, Catherine. It sounds like an absolutely thoughtful, wonderful production. And I'm so glad you could take the time to speak with me about it.
Thanks to you, Sarah. It was nice to talk to you.
That was Catherine Bourgeois of Joe, Jack and John Theatre Company. She conceived and directed Violette, which just launched this week at Espace Libre. It's running until May 30th. The show is only 25 minutes long and is presented in French and in English. Virtual reality headsets and headphones are used, and they're sterilized after each performance, accessible for people in wheelchairs or with reduced mobility. Tickets and information at espacelibre.qc.ca. I'm Sarah DeAy, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Sketch and improv shows tend to not need a lot, in the sense that most of the time, all you really need is a stage, someone to work in the music and the lighting, and a willing cast and suggestions.
Open the door. Seek new world. In here, security. 90.3 FM from Montreal.
Your census invitation has arrived in the mail. Your participation will help plan programs and services for your community. Your census, your community, your future. A message from the Government of Canada.
Okay, I gotta let you go. I have to get my Lake Magog vaccine.
Your Lake Magog vaccine?
Yeah, you know, I'm really looking forward to having the whole family to the cottage for my annual cookout.
Smart move. I'm gonna ask for the Montreal vaccine. I miss those last-minute get-togethers with my buddies.
Nice. Well, I gotta run. I don't think it protects against lateness.
Each vaccination brings us closer to these moments. Follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book an appointment at quebec.ca/COVID vaccine. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome to the May 13th edition of Grey.